In other words, please be true. In other words, I love you.
Listeners, welcome to Musings on 93.3 CFMU. My name is Abdullah, and I'm joined by Naveed for our very first episode. Naveed, how are you feeling?
Feeling good. How are you?
Feeling good. Feeling a little bit nervous, maybe.
A little bit. First episode.
First episode. Yeah. It's been
excited though.
Yeah, it's been a while in the making.
Yeah, it has.
Yeah. Just reflecting back a little bit.
Topic is so exciting. It's CRISPR. You know.
CRISPR. Yeah. Very exciting stuff. Very controversial.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like when people hear the word CRISPR, they get a bit, you know, kind of scared. I feel like it's been a bit of a buzzword. But Naveed, our job today is to clear the air on what CRISPR is.
Yeah.
Hopefully ease the doubts of some folks. I think we should do at the start, we should probably explain what CRISPR is.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people also don't really know what CRISPR is. We're going to get a little bit into the science, and then we're going to go on to the actual controversy. Do you want to take us away, give a little synopsis?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, CRISPR, fairly new technology, you know. It's when you hear about gene editing in humans and a lot of the new gene editing research that's been done, a lot of it is related to CRISPR technology. Fundamentally, CRISPR is a way for us to, you know, identify certain points of our genome and edit it by inserting or deleting certain parts of it. It's incredibly complicated, but
I don't think the listeners want to hear that.
Yeah, at a base level, we basically just use a couple of proteins that tag the correct sequence, and then we use some molecular scissors to snip that sequence and insert a new one or completely delete it. And that allows us to control so many different parts of our genome and other species' genomes as well.
Yeah, and that's the problem, isn't it, Naveed?
Yeah.
Controlling the genome. I think a lot of people are worried about that. Essentially, the problem behind CRISPR is that now we have access to change the fundamental building blocks of life and all the wonderful things that entail with that. And I think the main kind of concern people have is editing humans. We'll talk a little bit about some of the cases that we've seen so far. But yeah, ultimately, that's kind of what we're here to talk about, is the issues with humans when it comes to CRISPR. So another thing about CRISPR as well, the researchers invented or at least developed the early technology actually won the Nobel Prize for this in chemistry in 2020. So two researchers from UC Berkeley, Emmanuel Charpentier, sounds correct.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And Jennifer Doudna were the engineers behind CRISPR. And, you know, you can tell it's a pretty big deal when you hear, you know, Nobel Prize when it comes to this stuff. And a lot of people call this a breakthrough of the century.
I'm not surprised. I mean, I would say, you know, with AI and a lot of those other things, this is up there with one of the most incredible advancements of humanity in recent history.
Definitely. I guess we should get kind of into the controversy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, one of the big concerns that people have is that what happens when CRISPR goes wrong? So we've seen in the past that CRISPR isn't 100% accurate, and it might be a little bit because we're still in like the early stages of freeing CRISPR out, but it's not fully there yet. Like, there's still issues that go on with CRISPR, especially with, you know, the proteins we were just talking about targeting like the wrong gene. And, you know, if it targets the wrong gene and it cuts, you know, a gene that's not supposed to be cut out, it could lead to a lot of issues. Especially if you edit, you know, cells that are developing into like other cells, it could lead to like larger scale issues.
And there's also the issue of the main CRISPR protein as well, that doesn't just disintegrate as soon as you use it for your purposes. It can travel to other places, have off-target effects. If you edit part of the genome that you weren't intending on editing, that could cause a lot of big problems.
Yeah.
And in humans, we don't want to risk that sort of thing, do we?
Definitely not. Naveed.
And I think with what you were saying about how it can go wrong, it's interesting to note that actually the experiments that they've been doing, they figured out that in human embryos, there's a much higher chance of mutations and adverse effects than in many of the other models they've tried, including adult human cells, mouse cells. So I think that with that in mind, at this stage in the game, we have to be really, really careful about what we do you know, in terms of regulation of this technology, how we move forward with it, and what we say about the ethics of introducing it into our societies.
Yes. When it comes to introducing our societies, I feel like one thing we should talk about is, again, the use of this in humans. We have the potential to, you know, edit the genes and create babies and create humans that have certain parts of their genes, you know, deleted. And that could lead to getting rid of certain, I don't know, like defects or like abnormalities or genes that could lead to abnormalities. And in some sense, you can think about this in a sort of breeding, like artificial breeding in a sense with humans, if it ever gets to that point. And when you hear about breeding in humans, there's a certain term we call that. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know what it is.
I think the term you're referring to might be eugenics.
Eugenics.
Very That's scary
also,
term.
Also a very scary term, very loaded I feel like. Term. Yeah. Eugenics essentially is just the breeding of humans, artificially selecting humans. There's a huge thing, you know, I guess one thing that comes to mind is like white supremacy. This is a whole thing back then with the Nazi movement, that sort of thing. So, you know, when it comes to CRISPR, people bring this word up, eugenics, every so often, and that also scares people a little bit. And one thing I'll say is, like, we're far away from having this become a thing where it's going to be regularly, you know, introduced into humans. I mean, we'll talk about a case where that was the that did happen, but we're still a ways from happening. So, you know, if anyone does kind of hear those words pop up, just remember we're not there yet, and hopefully we never will be. Another thing I want to talk about when it comes to the actual, you know, the use of CRISPR is the cost that comes with using CRISPR. CRISPR is expensive.
Very expensive.
Upwards to like millions of dollars to be able to, you know, create one single, you know, animal or human from a CRISPR experiment type of thing.
I think they mentioned per patient it can cost upwards of $2 million for even simple procedures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so what that brings to mind is, again, we talk very briefly about the potential of CRISPR to be able to delete certain genes that could lead to abnormalities. And for example, the one thing that comes to mind is, you know, hereditary diseases, right? So a couple could take, you know, a fertilized embryo of their offspring and have CRISPR done on them so that they can take out a gene that's responsible or edit a gene that's responsible for some kind of disease that they both carry or have the potential to pass off. And they could get people to take that out of their kid's embryo, and they can grow up. That kid could grow up without having to worry about that disease. And then that kid's kids won't ever have to worry about the disease. So now what that kind of brings to mind is that, you know, the potential of there being a barrier, a socioeconomic barrier in getting this treatment to other people. So what do you think of that?
You know, I think it's an interesting point. I think in a lot of aspects of medicine, socioeconomic barriers are something that we really need to consider. Even looking, you know, across countries, you can see that in the Western world, there's a lot of medications that we discover that we create that haven't been accessible to, you know, third world countries around the world, simply due to cost, due to manufacturing, due to all sorts of stuff. And I think CRISPR is definitely susceptible to that sort of problem. Mm-hmm. But even within an individual country, right, there's different kinds of medical systems. We have two-tiered medical systems. We have privatized healthcare, public healthcare, all of that sort of thing. And I think, you know, it very much depends on what kind of healthcare system that country has and how they would think about integrating CRISPR into it. Because I don't know if you can put all of that financial burden on insurance companies and the government, but you also certainly can't put it on people. Mm-hmm. So the question is, how are we able to integrate this technology that could be used for a lot of good, as you said, with hereditary diseases, in a way that either doesn't bankrupt anybody who even thinks about using it, and also makes it more accessible to everybody within a country, across countries, in any population.
Do you think it's a matter of just waiting until that technology's cheaper to do? Like, I guess with like computers, for example, like you look at computers from like the 70s, they were massive, right? If you wanted to make a computer or buy a computer, it cost you hundreds and hundreds of thousands of, maybe millions of dollars, right? Mm-hmm. But now you can buy a computer, like consider a smartphone a computer, a couple $100 and get you a usable smartphone, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe in the future, the same thing will happen to CRISPR, where, you know, we said $2 million per patient now, but maybe in the future it'll be a couple grand. You know what I mean? I feel like with other medical procedures, maybe even for surgery or whatever the case, things were probably more expensive and less reliable back then. But now that stuff is done, you know, in Canada at least, it's covered by insurance or covered by the government.
And a lot of it is because it's on such a small scale, CRISPR, right? I mean, anything that's been done for the first time was incredibly expensive.
Yeah.
Not only because, you know, it's novel technology and we don't have all of the resources, but because we don't have any factories to make it in, on large scales, we haven't really invested much money into finding easier ways to make it. It's just, you know, a little bit less easy for us to mass produce something and make it cheaper when it's on such an experimental scale. That and regulation for the precursors, right? I mean, CRISPR is a protein system. Someone has to make those proteins. All of these different parts of the system have to be created. And it can be really hard to get approval to create all of those things, but also get materials to create all of those things. And so I think that, you know, one day when we're able to, like, if we decide to incorporate this technology into our societies, it will be a lot cheaper just by virtue of the fact that we're able to mass produce it and have less regulation for the precursors. So I have hope for the cost.
You think we'll have like CRISPR kits? You know, we had like COVID CRISPR kits. We'll have like CRISPR kits in the future.
I mean, I really hope we don't, because, you know, that's another point that I think I wanted to mention, is that what if this technology gets to the wrong people? Right?
Oh yeah.
We talk about all of these positive impacts, like, oh, you know, hereditary diseases and all sorts of conditions that we could prevent, but like you mentioned, eugenics is something that a lot of people would want to get out of CRISPR. You know, there's lots of negative things that we can get out of CRISPR. The potential for biological warfare just skyrockets, right?
Biological warfare with CRISPR?
Yeah. I mean, we're definitely nowhere near that right now, but it is a concern that some people have raised. As of now, I don't know how warranted that concern is, but you can imagine that, you know, the genome, our fundamental code, what makes us who we are, being able to mess with that could have real implications.
And one thing that's interesting, I mean, so a little bit more background on CRISPR is that in order to facilitate CRISPR for any gene, you need to be, you need to know where the gene is and what the sequence of the gene is, right? With the human, we've recently sequenced the entire human genome, so we know pretty much all the genes in humans that encode for proteins and whatever, right? So that's another concern too. Like, we all have, I think, I can't remember, this is the Human Genome Project, right? I don't know if it's like an open source thing, whatever, but people will potentially have access to the entire human genome. And again, if it gets in the wrong hands, some kind of mad, you know, evil scientist gets their hand on CRISPR and the genes and that sort of stuff. So, yeah.
And it's also important to remember that if we put this technology in the hands of the general public, you know, a little knowledge is a dangerous thing, right? You might think that you know more about a subject than you actually do. The human genome is incredibly complex. I mean, we don't understand what a lot of the genes that we have do. Sure, we know what they are. We know what the code is, but we don't really know the function of that code. And so if you just fiddle around with stuff, you could have a lot of unintended consequences. But also, we're still discovering like the functions of a lot of these genes, and people are really interested across various disciplines to figure out what the source of certain behaviors are genetically, right? I think it's well known that no complex behavior really has a single gene origin.
Right, yeah.
But, you know, you can imagine that there's lots of people who have a lot of interest in looking for genes that cause, like, you know, people to have certain tendencies or whatever. And, you know, if we're wrong about that, how much damage could that cause? You know, even if we are right about that, who determines what sorts of conditions or traits or even just behaviors, if they do have a genetic basis, who determines what should be edited in, what should be edited out? It's something that I don't think we should really give to everybody like we do a COVID test.
You know? Okay. I see what you mean. Leave it up to the more informed, the scientists and that sort of thing. Interesting. Naveen, I think we've kind of explained pretty well what the controversy looks like. Do you want to take a little break and then go into some of the applications of CRISPR you've already seen?
Absolutely.
Sounds good.
All right.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Musings on 93.3 CFMU. We're back to talk about some of the things we've seen with CRISPR happen in the last little bit. Naveed, I think you can also agree this is probably one of the biggest cases that people talk about when we, you know, consider CRISPR and how it's been implemented already. But a couple years ago, a Chinese professor named He Jiankou essentially helped create the world's first gene-edited babies. So we kind of talked about like what this could look like, and this is an example of what it has looked like so far. So you
very
would think
controversial.
So you would think, you know, like, oh wow, this guy created the first gene-edited babies. This guy should probably win a Nobel Prize or something. Instead, this guy went to jail. he's was sentenced to 3 years in prison over his experiments with creating HIV-resistant twin girls prior to birth by editing their genes in vitro, essentially, while they were, you know, little cells, basically. Mm-hmm. So yeah, he was sent to jail for 3 years and was fined 3 million yuan, which is about $500,000 Canadian. And yeah, his peers and the government did not react very kindly to that. The main issue was that it was a violation of violating ethics and regulations of research, having no qualifications, and you know, essentially the main reason is that he wasn't supposed to be doing this. He did not get approval to do this, and the way that he did it was not really appropriate for the current research guidelines.
I mean, in terms of scientific advancement, incredible, right? It's just that, you know, in science,
well, I doubt a lot of his work is really going to get published and put out there. Probably for the best. But yeah, so again, the reason this is brought up so much is, again, it's because it's one of the first cases, but I think the first case of this actually being used in humans. So yeah, what do you think about that? I'm curious before I say anything about it.
You know, I think the fact that they were able to achieve this, that he was able to achieve this, is incredible in terms of science. But, you know, we have to consider that when we do experiments, when we're, you know, looking for new science, we have to be mindful of the ethics, we have to be mindful of the regulations, all those sorts of things, which were unfortunately a little bit disregarded. And I think the biggest thing about this case was that there wasn't really an enormous reason to go through all of this, you know, violation for HIV, because we already have antiretroviral medications for HIV. We have current treatments and medications.
Do you think it was more of a maybe like a proof of principle type of thing too, just to show people that this is something that can be done using this technology?
I think that's maybe probably where it like originated and why they did
I couldn't really find much on like his motivations and that sort of stuff. I feel like this stuff was probably kept a lot under wraps too, just because of how crazy the stuff was.
I think that's, you know, for HIV in particular, like, I don't think it was warranted in this case. I mean, it's an enormous issue, but we already have solutions that are pretty far along that we're exploring, and I think that this sort of high-risk research wasn't warranted for something like that.
Yeah, interesting. But again, I think it was, like, in my opinion, I think this was more just, like, for him to show people that this is something that's definitely done.
Very interesting case, though.
One of the researchers who won the Nobel Prize for like inventing this also called him out on this, saying what he did was concerning because HIV transmission, again, does have preventative measures, and essentially saying what you said, that it wasn't really necessary to do this for a medical reason. One interesting kind of concept that came out of this was the idea of consent when it comes to editing things.
Absolutely.
The idea that having this done on someone before they're, it's kind of weird to wrap around your head, but before they're even born, putting this, you know, putting them through this thing where you're editing their genes the way, you know, they function as a human without their sort of consent. But the thing with that also is that, you know, there's no really way to even get consent as an adult. This is something that happens, you know, in the embryo stage, you know what I mean? So what do you have to say about that?
I think it's definitely an interesting topic. It's a little bit touchy. I think that a lot of people could have very strong opinions on this sort of subject. At the stage that this sort of radical CRISPR intervention is done, you're no more than an embryo, a single cell, maybe a cluster of cells, you know? And I suppose the question is about whether we're going to obtain consent from that cell. And if we're going to, how would we even do that?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's interesting. You could get the parents to give consent. You could go through all sorts of different motions and ways to try and sort this out. But fundamentally, I think that it's not going to be particularly easy to wrap consent into this puzzle, considering that, at least for this case in particular, there are cases where we can do CRISPR on adults, and that's different. But for embryonic type of intervention in particular, I don't think that we'll be able to come to a conclusive answer about how to get consent, and if we need to have that sort of consent, if it isn't, you know, if it doesn't lie with the parents first.
I see. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Certainly, we still have a long ways to go with that, for sure. I think this not besides just, you know, CRISPR itself, I think this had a lot of implications on the process of research itself, mm-hmm. and how we, you know, regulate what people research and how they can research and when they can research, this sort of thing. My kind of what I think is going to happen is that, or I think even already has happened, is that people are a lot more critical of when of like people proposing research with CRISPR. I think when it comes to this sort of stuff, I think there's a much higher bar that has to be set in terms of how you're going to ensure that this doesn't get used for the wrong reasons, that it's going to be used for the purposes you intended to use it for. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to have a lot of implications on the research side of things as well. So I'm really, really interested in seeing how that pans out.
We need to be careful about, you know, just because we can doesn't necessarily mean that we should, you know, when it comes to CRISPR.
Mm.
I think there are so many things that we could do. There are so many possibilities. It is incredibly powerful technology, but, you know, that's not a reason to violate ethics. Historically, that's been the case in science. Historically, you know, a lot of communities were, a lot of terrible things were done to them for science, and I don't think that that's something that we can perpetuate in the name of innovation, because there's other ways to get there, better ways to get there, you know?
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing what the outcome of this will be the next few years.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's something else you wanted to chat about, another case with something to do with sickle cell. You want to chat about that?
Yes, absolutely. I think that when people think of CRISPR and interventions, a lot of them think about the embryonic stage, the zygote stage, right? Where you're just a single cell at conception. What a lot of people don't realize is that we can actually use CRISPR for adult intervention. And one of the biggest cases of this is with sickle cell anemia. So sickle cell anemia, in very basic terms, is basically just the condition where your red blood cells are the wrong shape. And this can cause a lot of issues because, you know, the shape of your cells is very particular and serves for a lot of functions, right? In sickle cell anemia, your cells are shaped a little bit like a sickle, you know, like a half moon almost, or, you know, crescent moon almost. And this can cause a lot of issues for people. And CRISPR allows us to create one of the most long-lasting impacts on this condition. For the longest time, it was really difficult to treat this condition and have long-lasting effects, but what they were able to do with CRISPR is they take your bone marrow, and your bone marrow is the source of where your red blood cells are made, right?
Right.
They take out some of your bone marrow, they modify it to produce the correct kind of blood cell, they remove all the faulty bone marrow that you had, and then put the edited bone marrow back in. And those cells will divide, repopulate, and then eventually you'll have more functional bone marrow that creates the correct kind of cells.
Oh,
and you're
wow.
able to have success rate, you're able to have pain-free patients for over a year, which is incredible, unheard of, right? It's some of the most powerful technology that we've ever seen come out of CRISPR for adults. And I think that this is one case that we could start rolling out much sooner than the embryonic stage because, you know, with the embryonic research, there's a lot of issues with consent, designer babies, you know, what can and can't we allow? Whereas when it's in adults, they have the ability to have informed consent. They know exactly what they're going to do, and it can really help them, you know, rectify a condition that they have that's been causing them a lot of pain, you know?
Wow. So there is ways that CRISPR could use to, you know, in to change things in like adults.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. Now that got me thinking, like, what other ways could, again, CRISPR be used at that adult stage? And the other thing that got me thinking is that, you know, what other kind of cells change and adapt throughout like your life and grow more? And that got me thinking about immune cells.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if CRISPR could be used to help people who are maybe like immunocompromised or something to be able to edit their genes so that the immune cells that they produce are more effective or something like that. Mm-hmm. Interesting. There's probably research out there on that or something.
I think a lot of the research regarding HIV might be to do with immune cells because that is an immune related condition.
And that's, that you think about it, that's pretty almost like a cheat code. I feel like you can just add your genes to be resistant against all like viruses and diseases and stuff.
It's incredible. I think it's genuinely one of the most powerful things to come out of science recently, and I think. Yeah, the ethics can be a big concern, but it's definitely not something that we should write off like that, you know?
Okay, interesting.
I think you wanted to talk about the more biopharmaceutical side of it, you know?
First thing I want to talk about is some issues with patenting the technology.
Yes.
So, the two researchers I mentioned earlier from UC Berkeley, again, they won the Nobel Prize, and they put in a request to, you know, patent this stuff for their own, for themselves. However, two other researchers at another university, they kind of butted in. They were like, hey, actually, we use this CRISPR technology to actually advance it, so we should get the patent for it. So ultimately, there's still an ongoing dispute about the patent for CRISPR. And the reason I wanted to talk about the pharmaceutical industry and just bio, the biomedical kind of field, is because once this patent stuff gets sorted out, companies will be vying for the rights and the licensing to be used this kind of technology. And, you know, if you know anything about these kind of companies, they have their own interests in mind. They've been using these to make money, try to circumvent regulations, and, you know, ethics are probably the least of their concern, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So ultimately what I wanted to talk about is that, you know, how are these companies going to be using this, the licensing for CRISPR, and how are those regulations going to look like? Mm-hmm. My main concern is that they're going to try to lobby, you know, whatever regulation board there is to allow them to use this technology as they kind of need. I'm a little concerned about that. I mean, I've done my reading on what other controversies behind biotech companies, and I'm a little bit concerned.
No, I agree with that. I think that you got to be real careful with the power that we give to these pharmaceutical companies, especially when it comes to something as powerful and life-changing as CRISPR.
Yeah.
I don't know if you heard about the whole bedaquiline controversy with Johnson & Johnson. I don't even remember how long ago it was, a couple of years ago maybe. But, you know, not super relevant, but it's just to sum it up, it was this tuberculosis medication that was incredibly powerful, but was not particularly accessible because of something to do with Johnson & Johnson and the patent they had on it. I'm not super, you know, not super informed on this topic, but essentially Johnson & Johnson was lobbying and trying to renew their patent, and, you know, through a combined effort of a lot of different parties and the internet and all of that sort of stuff, they were able to talk them out of that. But, you know, I think it can be really scary when we allow pharmaceutical companies to have so much power over things that can really save people's lives and change the world, because, you know, who's to say that we should give this life-changing procedure to some people and not others, you know what I mean? I don't think that we can give that power,
you know,
to a company.
That kind of takes me back to the conversation we had about that social economic barrier, right? Mm-hmm. Even when this technology is cheaper to manufacture and produce and replicate and that sort of stuff, if these companies get the licensing to use them, they could just jack up the prices however much they want, even if it doesn't take them a lot. We see this in the US with pharmaceuticals, right? The making the actual drugs itself doesn't really take too much you know, resources to make, but they market them up for exuberant prices. Like, they're absolutely insane. Mm-hmm. So I think I foresee something similar happening with CRISPR when this whole patent stuff is resolved and that sort of thing.
You know, it's really interesting, though, the whole pricing thing. I worked on a project recently where we pitched this new, like, theorized treatment for some sort of cancer to this company, right? And I think that our finance team, like, they tried to mark it up like a couple hundred percent from what it actually cost to make it, like several hundred percent. Mm-hmm. And we already thought that that was pretty exorbitant. And then when we went to the company and told them about this, they were like, you're not marking it up enough. And we were like, what do you mean we're not marking it up enough? It really is insane how much extra they charge for these life-saving medications simply because they can't.
If you had access to CRISPR technology right now, what is one thing you would change about yourself?
Oh, about myself?
About yourself.
Well, you know, that's actually an interesting question. You know, I don't know if they would be able to do this, but I would love
just
to.
Just let's say, like, CRISPR was like, you could edit anything about your body right now using CRISPR. Just anything about yourself.
Oh, I would love to have, like, a photographic memory. You know what I mean?
Oh.
I think that would just be incredible. That would make you just, like, a superhuman in terms of ability to absorb knowledge and sort of stuff like that.
Wow.
How about you?
I feel like photographic memory is a better answer than what I had. I would have said be taller.
I mean, there is that surgery they do now where they, like, break your legs.
Yeah, but I don't
want
to deal with that. It's just,
a lot of recovery.
Just make me grow just like that would have been better.
Put some molecular scissors in you.
Yeah. Well, Naveed, I think we had some pretty fruitful conversations. Mm-hmm. Listeners, I hope that you guys learned a little bit more about CRISPR. Maybe if you guys were nervous about this becoming a bigger issue, hopefully we kind of calmed you down a bit there. Definitely read more into CRISPR. There's a lot that we can chat about that we didn't cover today. But thanks so much for tuning into our first episode. Navid, do you have anything, any final parting words?
Not particularly. Loved having this chat, Abdullah.
Yeah. Take care, everyone.
Yeah.